A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Since the Passover of the Jews was near, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. He found in the temple area those who sold oxen, sheep, and doves, as well as the money changers who were seated there. He made a whip out of the cords and drove them all out of the temple area with the sheep and the oxen, and spilled over the coins on the money changers' tables. And those who sold doves, he said, "Take these out of here, and stop making my Father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered the words of Scripture, "Zeal for your house will consume me." At this, the Jews answered and said to him, "What sign can you show for doing this?" Jesus answered and said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." And the Jews said, "But this temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days." But he was speaking about the temple of his body. Therefore, when he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they came to believe the scripture that the word Jesus had spoken. The Gospel of the Lord. Let me just pause for a few moments and offer some words of background to understand the celebration we have today for John Lateran, and to understand a little of the background on this very unique and strange reading we have today about Jesus cleansing the temple. Many of you have been to Rome, and when you go to Rome, you're invited to visit the four major basilicas. Well, everybody goes to St. Peter's, and the Pope lives there, and you have the Sistine Chapel and the museum, and so everybody goes to St. Peter's. Now, more and more people will go to St. Mary Major, since Pope Francis is buried there. And then the enterprising people will walk, actually it's only a 10-minute walk from Mary Major to St. John Lateran, and a very pleasant walk. And maybe they'll go to St. John Lateran. Now, St. John Lateran is so important in the life of the church that the celebration of its dedication displaces the normal Sunday liturgy. So let me look at the meaning of St. John Lateran being so important in the life of the church. It's the earliest Christian church in Rome. Goes back to Constantine, the emperor, built in 324. Now, the edifice you're looking at today comes in the 16th, 17th century. But the original John Lateran goes back to the 4th century, to 324. So it's the earliest church. And on the facade, as you enter this major basilica, there is written in Latin, "Omnium Ecclesiarum Urbi et Orbis, Caput, Mater et Caput," of all the churches in the city of the world, in the city and the world, this is the Mater et Caput, the mother and the head. So it's the first most important church in Christendom. Second thing that's interesting about it is, for 1,000 years, the popes all lived at the Lateran. Until the papacy was displaced to Avignon in France and came back in 1377, back to Rome finally, and then settled at the Vatican, where the Pope now has his headquarters at the Vatican. But so John Lateran has a very, very important place in the history and the life of the church, so much so that there is a certain feast set aside every year for remembering the dedication of St. John Lateran. So you'll know why we celebrate that feast today. The second background that's of interest to us has to do with the temple, because today's gospel is set in the temple area. Now, all of you who have been to Jerusalem will understand the Temple Mount, Mount Moriah, is about 40 acres, like 6 football fields. It's a huge, expansive area on Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount, where the temple was in the time of Jesus. Of course, the temple was destroyed in the year 70 by the Romans. No temple there anymore. All that's left is the Western Wall, sometimes called incorrectly the Wailing Wall. It's the Western Wall of the temple, and that's where we all go to pray, remembering the temple itself. We go to the Western Wall of the temple, and most sacred place in the world for all Jewish people. The mount itself is controlled by the Muslims. And 1577, something like that, the Muslims defeated the last crusade. Actually, it was 1377 to be precise. It was the last crusade, the great battle of Hattin, and the crusaders lost control of Jerusalem, and the Muslim Saladin, the leader of the Muslims, took over Jerusalem, and ever since, the Muslims control the mount, the Temple Mount, and they have a huge mosque up here, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's the third holiest place in the world for all Muslims. We have Mecca, where Muhammad was born, and Medina, where he is buried, and then we have the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And there are lots of reasons why, for the Muslims, that's a very sacred space, but I don't have time to say everything I want to say about it. But at least you know the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, mentioned in today's gospel, is now controlled by the Muslims and the third holiest place in the world for all people who belong to Islam. The gospel itself is fascinating, but you must take a deeper look at it. If all we knew about Jesus was of what appears here in the second chapter of John, that he got angry and he drove out the sellers of the animals and overturned the money changers. If that's all we knew, it would be a strange understanding of who Jesus Christ is. However, it's important. Jesus gets angry. Is he fully human? Can he get lonely? Does he feel rejection? Does he feel loved, cared for? Does he feel understood? Does he feel judged? Does he feel abandoned? Read the last week of his life. The emptiness, the poverty, the abandonment of his life, the loneliness of his life. So, angry, he got angry. But it's the anger that comes in the moment and it passes. It's not anger that we hold and keep and keep. But Jesus begins his life, public life here, cleansing the temple in the Gospel of John. So what does this mean to us? I found it very interesting to begin to study this for the last week. By the way, Richard Rohr has a new book out called Insane for Light. Very interesting, and I'll mention it in my reflection in a moment. According to the mystic, John of the Cross, a Carmelite mystic, 16th century, he says there are three major passages in life. This is interesting for us. Three major passages. It's not unusual to find passages in life, by the way. The Hindus, the oldest religion in the world, the Hindus have the four passages, you know, the student, the settler, the forest dweller, and then the wise person. If you read the Odyssey, remember the Odyssey? Homer's Odyssey, where Odysseus prepares himself. He goes through this formation, and then he becomes a warrior. He goes to war. He's very successful. He comes home, and he figures he's landed now. Everything is fine. But the blind prophetess, Tiresias, says, no, you have to go on another journey. So he goes on another journey. You can read about that yourself. John of the Cross talks about these passages in life. First passage is, you get your life together. You're young, you're growing, you're searching, you're risking, you're wondering, you wander away from the church, you don't believe in stuff, you think your parents are old and out of touch. Whatever it is, this is the growing years. These are the growing years. We all go through it somewhere in different forms, but it's you get your life together, says John of the Cross. This is your first stage in three stages according to the spirituality of John of the Cross. We experiment, we make mistakes, we grow, and eventually we get to some level of maturity. And then comes the second step, which is you give your life away. You give your life away. What would that mean to us? You enter the convent, you give your life away, you become a priest, you give your life away. You get married, you're going to give your life away. You give your life to your spouse, and then you give your life to your children. You're giving your life away. A single person will decide, I have a mission in life, and this is the manner in which I will live my mission, by giving my life away, says John of the Cross. And we go through this whole sequence of giving our life away. It's a passage in life. And somewhere out here, toward the wisdom years, it changes. The kids are gone, life is different. You'll see the grandchildren for Thanksgiving and Christmas maybe, but they're gone. And then you come to what John of the Cross says, you give your death away. You give away your death. You teach people how to die. How do you give your death away? How do you teach people how to die? You forgive. You don't hold grudges. You want to die in peace. You let things go. You don't have to control. You don't have the last word. You express gratitude for the gifts of your life. You give your death away. You don't have to conquer anything anymore. You're depreciating in your life. You can feel it. I used to run around the block. Now, maybe I can walk around the block. That's the whole process of dying. You give your life away. Don't deny it. Don't bury it. Hold it up as sacred. It's a holy time. It's a time for us to give example of how to die. You're giving your death away, says John of the Cross. And that's the theme of Rollheiser's new book. But it also appears in, you know, David Brooks has The Second Mountain, or Richard Rohr has, you know, Falling Upward. Lots of stuff written on this. How to give your death away. How to live a life peaceful, not angry, not bitter, not disappointed, not complaining, not murmuring. Hey, I'm alive, and I have the opportunity to give my death away. Now you have to think about that. I wrote journals on that during the week. Yeah, I really did slow down. I used to leap up these steps. Now I kind of walk up these steps. That's a whole process in life. It's a whole journey. And there's a spirituality attached to each of the passages of life. So what does this mean in the gospel? When you get your life together and you're entering into giving your life away, it's a radical decision you make. I decided to become a priest. I was 24 years old. It's a radical, life-altering change. You get married, life-altering. You do something that is radical in your life. And now Jesus goes up to the temple. It's near the Passover. And he makes a radical statement about his life. Driving out the thing, cleansing the temple, it's a radical statement about this is his mission. And this is the way he begins his mission in the Gospel of John. And now, by the way, read on in the life of Christ and you'll find the last week of his life, the Passover, he comes up to Jerusalem and he gives his death away. He's peaceful. He goes through an agony. But he says, Father, not my will, but yours be done. He goes through loneliness. He's giving his life, his death. He's giving his death away. And on the cross, he forgives the criminal who is next to him. There's a richness. There's a power. There's a fulfillment. There's a grace in giving your death away. Now we have to think about that. I mean, that's not something that you can just say, look, I think I understand it. Maybe you do. But for most people, you have to stand back, as Oscar Romero said, you have to stand back and take the long view. And when you take the long view, then you begin to understand. Jürgen Drohermann, this great German theologian, has a marvelous book saying, dying, we live. Hoarding, we die. When we die, we live. When you give your life away and you die to yourself, you're alive. Life has meaning. When you come to your elder years and you give your death away, then you find meaning in your life. Let it go. Live your age. We disguise our age. We manufacture things to get to give ourselves the impression that we're young and we're crazy. We're not. We're old and we're wise. Think about that. That's what this gospel is about. It's not about just cleansing the temple. It's about a radical statement that Jesus makes. This is my mission. And here it begins in the Gospel of John. And the third passage in the life of Christ will begin in the temple area, in Jerusalem, around the Passover, as Jesus enters into the last and third stage according to John of the Cross. So he forgives, he breaks bread with his disciples, he shares the Eucharist with those who will betray him and the one who will deny him. He will build a friendship and a bond with those who will abandon him in his time of crisis. He doesn't hold resentment, no anger, just peace. That's what it means to give your life away, and then, in the last stages, to give away your death.